The July 17, 2018 regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Plan Commission will now come to order. Please stand for the invocation and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
We thank you, O Lord, for the good weather that we're having. Thank you for the little rain, for the dry, dry earth. We also ask you, O Lord, to look on us with your mercy. Have us to make good and humble and fair decisions. Look on our service men and women who serve all over the country for our safety. We ask this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. There is a sign-in sheet near the door to the hearing room. Please sign the sheet to record your attendance at today's meeting. For those of you who would like to speak, we ask that you sign one of our blue speaker cards. Give the blue speaker card to a staff member at the front table so that we can call your name at the appropriate time. There are agendas on the table outside near the hearing room. Today's agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, consent agenda, which consists of items which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation. There are no known objections. To outline the order in which the meeting is conducted, each petition has report presented by staff to the board, providing information on the petition. After the staff presentation, board members may ask questions of staff regarding the presentation for clarification. The petitioner is then offered to make a presentation regarding his petition to the commission. Time frame of 10 to 30 minutes is allowed for petitioner's presentation. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. The total public time, because comment time will be the equivalent of the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it's important that speaker cards are provided if you want to speak on a particular petition. Once the floor is open for public comment on the petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain you want to speak, still provide a card. You have an option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. And finally, the board will take action. Our first item on our agenda is approval of our agenda.
So moved. Second.
Properly moved and second. Any discussion? Call the question. Ready for the vote. Late but steady.
Sometimes. Done.
Motion is approved. Next, we have notices, proclamations. We met, Finance Committee met today at 11 o'clock. We had a brief discussion. Our next planning meeting will be July 24th at 1 p.m. here. There are several items. There's one item that has been requested for removal from the final agenda. Item number four. Is anyone here on behalf of item number four? I believe item four has been removed to our next meeting. We'll entertain a motion to remove the item from the final agenda.
So moved.
Been properly moved and second. Discussion? Call the question. Ready for the vote. been approved. We have several items that have been withdrawn from our agenda as well. Item 5, is there anyone here to speak on behalf of item 5? And item 6 has been removed from the agenda. Is anyone here to speak on behalf of item number 6? There being no one, entertain the motion.
Second.
Been properly moved and second. Any discussion? Call for question.
Are these permanently removed or are they just coming back later?
Mr. Watson, do you know?
Those last two items are permanently removed.
Milton, we were waiting on you.
Oh, I did that. I don't know why.
That has been approved. Thank you, Ms. Milton. We have another item on the consent agenda, item number 7. We move to our briefing and regular meeting minutes. Chair will entertain a motion.
So ordered.
Properly moved and second. Any discussion? Call the question. Vote brief. Approved. Next, we have old business. Item number 8, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, pardon me. Item number 8 is an item that came before you back on May 15th originally and was continued until today. The petitioners requesting a zoning text amendment to section 4-5.2 of the BNIU schedule to permit certain residential housing types in the TB zoning classification. This item was continued from the May meeting for the purpose of allowing the petitioner to explore some opportunities to amend his text amendment so that it would have less impact on other TB zone properties in terms of allowing the use that's been requested. What's been requested is that the district be amended to allow one-family dwellings, two-family dwellings, and multifamily dwellings. The current TB zoning classification does allow several housing types, but it does not allow those uses. Other uses that are included that are currently permitted under the TB zoning district includes tourist homes, marinas, restaurants, offices, yacht clubs, hotels, and other commercial and non-residential uses. The petitioner's request is related to a proposed future development at a currently zoned TB property. In our discussion during the May meeting, one of the issues that came about from the standpoint of the board's concern was allowing these residential housing types in some of the other areas in the county that are zoned TB. And in the pre-meeting, we did go through the TB zone properties in the county, which we'll review briefly. But the petitioner, as a result of that conversation, added some conditions to their request. So they're recommending that these conditions be added to their request. The conditions include that while allowing one family, two family, multifamily residential in the TB zoning district, if adopted, that provision be allowed only in the case where there are contiguous lots of 4 upland acres or more, and that it shall also be established in conjunction with the mixed-use development. Quickly, the TB zone properties that are in the county, we did identify. This is a property at Highway 17 and Basin Road, which most of you know as Love Seafood. This is an aerial of that property. The portion of this property that is zoned TB under the proposed amendment would not qualify for residential uses, other than those that are already permitted. This is a The next property is a property adjacent to the Bull River, Johnny Mercer Boulevard, Highway 80. This includes several parcels, but these properties are all currently zoned TB. So all those uses that we discussed previously are currently permitted in this district. So this is an area that if there were 4 contiguous acres would be impacted by the proposed amendment. This is an aerial of that same property, or those properties. This is an existing convenience store gas station, and there are several commercial uses in here, including a restaurant, self-storage facility, and some other commercial uses. This property is the Isle Hope Marina, which is zoned TB, the 2 parcels that include the marina. That property is zoned TB. It is less than 4 acres in size. This is an aerial of the existing marina. This is property along the Roche Avenue, which includes the Saltwater Grill restaurant, portion of Fiddler's Crossing, which is a townhome community, and other non-residential uses. There are not 4 contiguous acres within this property, so that would not be permitted as recommended by the applicant. The residential housing type, and this is an aerial of that property. There was a discussion about some property that's associated with the restaurant, which is this parking lot across the street, but because it is not contiguous to the other parcel, it would not be permitted to count toward the 4 acres if this amendment is adopted. This is the property at Sail Harbor Marina. The applicant is the owner of the western property here, and it's our understanding that they are either under contract or in discussion with the current owner of that immediately adjacent property in terms of acquiring it. And this is an aerial of that property, which includes their undeveloped property, which is a former marina and restaurant, the adjacent property, which is I think the only thing on that currently is a duplex. And the property immediately adjacent to that is the current Sail Harbor Marina boatyard. In the lower left of the property, you can see the former Sheridan Hotel, which is a townhome development now. There are a number of properties along Highway 17 that were zoned TB originally when the TB zoning was adopted in the county. This property is an existing self-storage facility. This is an undeveloped portion of a right-of-way, street right-of-way, and a small existing warehouse. So those properties, the self-storage facility is more than 4 acres. That would be the only property amongst these that, if this amendment was adopted, would be impacted. And you can see the aerial of that portion of Highway 17 as it's developed down. Lastly, this is the aerial of the Savannah Yacht Club, an existing marina with recreational facilities. This property is a lot more than 4 acres. Currently, it's about 25 acres. But as you can see, it's fully built out. There is adjacent residential to this property. And I show you those just to give you a feel for the current TB zone properties in the county. We do understand that, of course, any property owner would have the right moving forward to request the TB zoning classification. But in review of the district and in the places where it's permitted, staff did find that residential housing types were appropriate in the TB zoning classification. In the existing locations or where we find TB, we did not feel that it would have a negative impact. And based on the conditions that we've put forth for your consideration today, we believe that would limit its impact further as it relates to residential housing tax being permitted in those districts. There was some discussion in the pre-meeting regarding some of the issues that would be related to the petitioner's future development plan if it gets to that point. The petitioner's representative is here today to discuss that, so we can get probably some further information that we did not have in the pre-meeting. Staff is recommending approval with the conditions as outlined in the report, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Watson just to go over the conditions again? Can you go over the conditions that are in the report?
Yes, sir. The conditions in the report, the petitioner is requesting that the TV zoning classification be amended to allow one family detached, one family attached, two family and multifamily dwelling types, with the condition that within the TV zoning classification that you shall be limited to contiguous lots of 4 upland acres or more and shall only be established in conjunction with a mixed-use development.
Any further questions of Mr. Watson? There being none, is the petitioner present? Would you kindly state your name for the record, and sir, you have 10 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert McCorkle from the law firm of McCorkle & Johnson. I'm here today representing the petitioner. We've got a fairly simple question before y'all today. And that fairly simple question is it appropriate to have residential uses in the TB zoning district? Is it detrimental to adjacent properties, which let's assume they're residential in this case, is it detrimental for adjacent residential properties to have residential uses adjacent to them? That is the basic question that's here today before you. In TB, which is tourist business, one of the stated purposes of that district is to create and protect commercial water recreational areas. Anybody who participates in this county in water recreation activities is aware of the fact that we are sorely lacking in water recreation activities. We are sorely lacking in waterfront restaurants and facilities that are available to the boaters of this community. I get asked a question all the time because I'm a boater and I'm a land use lawyer as to why we don't have more restaurants on the water. You go on vacation, everywhere you go, anywhere you go on vacation that's on the water, you're going to see marinas with mixed-use residential and single-family residential all mixed in one place. You're going to see restaurants that people pull up to with boats all the time. You don't see much of that in Chatham County, much of it at all. People ask me why, and part of the reason is because it's so expensive. Waterfront property in Chatham County or the surrounding counties is so expensive that it's very difficult for any developer to buy a piece of waterfront deep water property with marina access for a restaurant or a similar marina use and be able to afford to develop it solely for that use. In order to develop it for that use and make it cost-effective and a viable project, then you need to be able to have mixed uses on that site, and mixed uses to include residential, which will help pay for the water recreation facilities that TB is trying to create in the statement of its own purpose. Allowing this to happen in TB in Chatham County is bring us into basically effect with the rest of the world, where these things happen all the time, all over the country. In Chatham County, where there are marinas and there are TB, you'll also note that in almost all of those locations, there is residential either as part of the development or immediately next to it. I'm just gonna show y'all just a couple of examples. This is Hilton Head, actually. This is not all Chatham County. But I just wanna show you some examples of some commercial marinas that have residential and commercial uses immediately next to them. This is another picture that shows, you'll see commercial on the bottom and residential up top, along with marina activities. This is in Thunderbolt. Many of y'all are familiar with Bahia Blue. If you're a Freedom boater or you use any of these facilities, then you've probably been down to this site. And you'll see there that there is a residential condominium located immediately next to Drystat boat storage and a fully functioning commercial marina with gas pumps, all in one location on one site. Now those two sites may be zoned differently, you split down the middle of the parking lot that they share together, but they're still immediately adjacent to each other. This is the site in La Roche that y'all saw a picture of earlier. You're all sure familiar with Saltwater Grill. You will see here that Fiddler's Crossing, who I happen to represent that neighborhood association, is located partially within the TV zone, incorporates these townhouses that are in Fiddler's Crossing, immediately next door, looking across these other TV zone facilities. This is our current facility. This is the status that it's been in for decades. This picture doesn't really do it justice for how bad it is. If you've ever driven down to the end of Bloomtown down there and going down to the corner and walked out of that site, there's graffiti all over everything. The windows are broken out. It's basically falling down all around it. And so my client has acquired this piece of property with the intent of reestablishing restaurant, bar, marina uses where the old Lightship Tavern was and developing the project. Now, we bring back up the picture. The site's already zoned TV. The adjacent sites to it are already zoned TV. In TV currently, we're allowed to have rooming houses. We can build rooming houses. We can build hotels. We can build motels. We can build resorts. We can have daycares and marinas and yacht clubs. We can have trailer rentals, self-storage, I believe. We can build a gas station. We can have drugstores and grocery stores, liquor stores, bars. Lots of uses that are significantly more intense than the single-family residential and the multifamily residential that we're here asking today to be added to that district. As noted by staff in their report, adding residential, quoting the staff, enhances the viability of these properties and makes it more likely that we could create these new developments. It does not, I want to be clear, what we're asking for today does not affect in any way any of the design standards that are already set forth in TV. We're not asking for changes in height or density or parking or any of those other things. All those things already exist. We build a hotel on this site right now. Whatever those standards are, they're out there, they already exist. This is our site. It's a good picture there. You can see it. You see it's next to the old Sheridan Hotel, which is probably the tallest building in unincorporated Chatham County, which is our immediate neighbor. You'll also see by looking at this site that we're not actually affecting anyone's view of the river. The adjacent properties, I'm not sure if this thing works. So the adjacent properties down here, these are all long lots that look out over the river out this way. The Sheridan has views going in all different directions. Our site is right here. There is no piece of property that has a view of the river across our property. In addition to the fact, this is heavily wooded currently. All heavily wooded. There is no view. We're not affecting anybody's property or anybody's view. As it exists on this site, on the Sail Harbor site, there is a functioning boat yard and marina. And the marina, which you'll see out there in the water there. At our last meeting, y'all expressed a very specific concern which we had not considered prior to coming up here. And that concern seemed to center around Isle of Hope and Bluff Drive. There was a lot of discussion about Isle of Hope and Bluff Drive about the possibility that on that site, somebody could construct a residential condo building and block the view of the owners on Bluff Drive. Bluff Drive's in a very unique situation because the residential owners live on one side of the street and the TV zoning is on the other side of the street, basically between the street and the marsh. That's not the case here. The street, which you can see is on the blue line, is backed up to by a golf course, which currently has no view across our property. So there, unlike Bluff Drive, there are no residences that see across us. But y'all's comment to me at that last meeting was, at least what I heard was, if you could figure out a way to make this site specific so that you're not affecting these other properties, then you know it's something that we could support. And so we spent the last few weeks trying to come up with exactly how we would go about doing that. We've had multiple conversations with Marcus about how to make that happen. And so the conclusion that we came to was, if we limit it to 4-acre sites, which eliminates all others TV zoned property, except for the properties that are already zoned TV here at the end of this road, and the Savannah Yacht Club, which I think we can all agree is not gonna be rezoned as a condominium development, then the Isle of Hope Arena cannot be used for these uses, and none of the other TV uses can be either. So we crafted this specifically to restrict it, so it is essentially only going to affect our site, and only affect our site if we develop it as a parcel that's 4 acres or larger. And so we've done that to protect all the other locations and all the other sites. So at the end of the day, we're here asking you all to support staff's recommendation. We agree thoroughly with everything that's in the staff report. We do not believe that this is going to cause any detriment to any surrounding neighbors to allow other residential neighbors to be next to them. And we also believe that it is, you know, in furtherance of the purpose of TV, which, by the way, I don't think you're going to get a lot of other requests from people coming up and requesting TV. To my knowledge, there's never been a piece of property in Chatham County that's been rezoned TV since it was adopted in the zoning ordinance was adopted in the 60s. I think every single piece of property that's TV was originally zoned TV. Part of this property at the end of this street was downzoned from TV by the county itself. But otherwise, I don't think there's ever been a request to rezone something TV, so I don't think that's a big danger either. That's pretty much what I've got to tell you, and we support staff's recommendation. I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Questions to Mr. McCorkle? Yes, Ms. Sellers.
I have a question. Mr. McCorkle, do you have any idea of what height you're thinking of building these townhomes?
We don't know. Currently in TV, there is no height requirement. So whatever we put out there, if it's dry stack storage or a hotel or whatever else we could build, there is no height restriction. We don't have a site plan yet. When we get to, because it's my understanding, is as it's a mixed-use property, when we get to that development, if we in fact develop a residential on the property, we would have to go through the site plan process. But as of right now, we don't have a height, no. But that's not going to be affected. I mean, again, whoever develops the site and whatever is developed for, nothing we're doing today is going to affect the height that it can be built to.
Any other questions of Mr. McCorkle? Thank you.
Sorry, Ms.
Watson. Mr. Watson has a question, sir. Thank you, Mr. McCorkle.
Thank you.
Mr. Lotzer, are you aware of any height restrictions within the TB zoning district?
The TB zoning district does not have a height restriction either for residential or non-residential uses.
All right. In our pre-meeting, the height of 36 feet came from? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the 36 feet was a reference to the standard height restriction where height restrictions exist in the county.
All right.
And that's primarily for residential uses.
Is there any reason that we should not be adding 36 feet to this text amendment?
Well, I think that could potentially limit other uses that are currently permitted in TB unnecessarily, because there are a number of uses in the TB zoning district that the 36 feet height limit could be restrictive for. So I think, as I mentioned in the pre-meeting, that if the board wants to consider adding some sort of height restriction to the district, it probably takes a little more research by staff to establish a number that makes sense for all the uses in the district.
Any questions, additional questions, Mr. Lotson?
What about some of the uses?
Mm-hmm.
Can we discuss eliminating some of the uses like boarding house or rooming house?
Well, the board can certainly take action in terms of making a recommendation that some uses that exist currently in TB be withdrawn from the district, yes.
Yes, Ms. Milton.
Well, without any restrictions on height, I mean, it could go either way with all the other uses that you have.
And from a standpoint of the development, height is a function of a lot of things that have to be met otherwise on the site for any development. As I mentioned before, you have to address things like stormwater runoff. You have to address things like parking, buffers, setbacks, and all that works toward limiting the amount of height that you can establish on any piece of property.
Ms. Coles.
Is there currently a requirement for a site plan review to come to this board, or is that something we should include in this?
That's something that the board in this case, if they wanted to see a site plan, would have to include.
Any other questions of Mr. Lotson? Mr. McCorkle, you have an opportunity if you'd like to address any concerns you may have heard from the commission.
I just concur with what Mr. Lotson said. My concern about 36-foot height limitation would be that it would limit other uses on the site. Again, if we were going to put a hotel on the site, if we can, if we decided that was what we were going to do, it would certainly be taller than 36 feet. I believe the building that's next door, adjacent to us, we'll say, our properties touch, actually, at one point. Our neighbor there, that building, I believe, is 14 stories. Obviously, we're not going to build a 20-story building on this piece of property. We're not going to build anything bigger than what it's shared is. But more importantly, I think it's important to know that, again, we don't we don't affect anybody's view. Regardless of what the height ends up being, nobody looks, nobody sees across our property. It's not a view corridor. So whatever height, whether it's 50 feet or 40 feet, whatever it would be, if it's any of that, I don't think it's going to have any effect on any adjacent property owners whatsoever. The only place you're really going to even perceive that height, whatever that height is built on this site, is from the roof. You're not, I mean, if you've ever driven down the road, and let me just step up here for a second. I mean, if you've ever driven down the road, the road actually comes off. It actually breaks off right here on this curve if you've ever been down here. And so the entrance to our property we currently own is about right here. And so even if we end up getting this expanded out to this site, you're well off the road out here. I don't think any height we build out on the site is going to affect. It won't even be perceived by people. Again, except for perhaps somebody driving by boat, as far as where that would be located.
Any additional questions? Yes, and so there's followed by Ms. Milton.
Mr. McCorkle, do you understand that when we approve or disapprove this text amendment, that it's not only your site that we have to consider? Therefore, there's 7 current sites that are RTB, and we have to be able to assume that someone may come in at some point and request TB. Adding residential use may make the TB zoning district more desirable than it currently is. So therefore, these questions are important to all properties, not your site-specific property. And as I recall, when we were here earlier, we talked with you about the possibility of talking to our planning staff about creating a zone that was unique to your property. And you're back with a text amendment for the TB. Now, I applaud you in making the fact that it's 4 acres or larger so that it doesn't affect the smaller tracts. But we do have to conscientiously make a decision based on all 7 tracts.
I understand that. And we did, at your request, come back and work with Marcus and have multiple discussions about how to accomplish what we were going to accomplish. We looked at Starland Village, for example, in Savannah, about how there was a specific text amendment that was PIN number specific about how that was done. We talked about potential other zones. We talked about ways to do this, and this is the conclusion that we came to as a manner of accomplishing what we were trying to accomplish while protecting sites. I'm aware there are 7 other sites. We drafted in such a way that it only is 2 sites, which is the other 5 sites are not large enough to be affected by this. So it's us and the Yacht Club. And again, our consideration when Marcus and I discussed this was that, again, the Yacht Club, chances of the Yacht Club going away after being there for the amount of time that it's been there and being redeveloped is fairly unlikely. So we consider this fairly site-specific, with the understanding that people obviously could come back and ask for other TB. But yes, I'm fully aware that it does affect all of the TB zone properties in Chatham.
Ms. Milton.
I just want to know, what's that in relation to the police camp? The police camp is...
The police camp is in between the property that we own and Sail Harbor Marina. Okay. It's our immediate neighbor. And so the property, I could pull out the zoning map, but the property that's zoned TV, it's basically this. It's kind of that square all the way down there. The police camp is zoned TV.
Ms. Southers?
So you are aware, Mr. McCorkle, I was in our pre-meeting, was interested in the fact that you have one, I think it's 2.8 acres that you currently own, which are the ones that are closest to the marsh, and then there's another piece of property that you must secure or purchase to make this property viable, because that's what makes the 4 acres. And so my question in the pre-meeting is, why are we changing a text amendment to a zoning district that affects all of the TB districts in question if you don't have that property tied up? Can you tell us where you are? Are you at liberty to be able to tell us where you are with that?
We have the property currently under contract and in our due diligence period. And let's call it our entitlement period, in order to get the entitlements that we need, which is why we're here today. But we do have the property under contract.
And that's what I wanted to do.
Any other questions of Corporal? There being none, is the motion on the table?
Make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, thank you. Yep. I don't have any speaker cards, but is there anyone to speak on this matter? Mr. Coles, I believe the process making a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to approve staff's recommendation with the additional condition that the site plan comes back before this board for review.
Motion's been properly made.
Second.
And second. Discussion? Call the question. Ready for the vote? Motion carries. Next we have on our agenda regular business, Mr. Wannerstedt.
Excellent pronunciation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is a request to rezone approximately 0.57 acres at 161 Canebrake Road. The request is to rezone it from the existing residential agricultural with the annexed suffix to RB1, which is the residential business district. The subject property is located on the south side of Canebrake Road. It's approximately a third of a mile to the east of Gateway Boulevard, where there are some existing regional commercial uses, and about a half a mile from the west of Ogeechee Road. Canebrake Road is classified as a minor collector per Department of Transportation. So this property was annexed into the city in 2005, and it actually retains the county's residential agricultural zoning district, but it has the county suffix in it to designate that it was actually annexed. Property is to the south and to the east of the site are also zoned RA and are located within the city, whereas properties to the north and the west are within the county but are also zoned RA. The site is adjacent to some single family residential to the south and to the north, some vacant land to the west, and other land uses along Canebrake include varying degrees of single family residential, residential agricultural, as well as some religious institutional uses. As I mentioned previously, about a third of a mile to the west along Gateway, there are some regional commercial uses, which include several hotels, restaurants, and general stores. The site is currently improved with two modular buildings. And the petitioner is requesting rezoning to utilize the site for some limited office use. However, keep in mind that a rezoning to the RB1 would permit all of the uses within the RB1 zoning district, which we have provided within Agenda Plus here for your reference if you'd like to take a look at them. The uses include within the RB1, continue to include single family residential, but also include some limited commercial, office, and personal service uses. So just keep in mind that while an office use is intended, all of the RB1 uses would be allowed if it were to be rezoned. The intent of the RB1 district is to create an area in which certain types of convenience, shopping, retail, and service uses can be established that are not detrimental to adjacent residential uses and that don't create an excessive amount of vehicular movement, noise, or fume generation. So the RB1 is intended to be compatible with adjacent single-family residential uses. Okay. Bringing up the future land use map here, the entire area along Canebrake Road is designated as regional commercial. So the RB1 district is actually slightly less intense than the future land use designation for this site. However, again, bringing back to the fact that there are RA zone properties around it. Given, though, that the RB1 district is intended to be compatible with adjacent residential uses and that the proposed rezoning is consistent with the future land use designation, staff does recommend approval of the RB1 zoning. The petitioner and the NPC should be aware, though, that on-site improvements may be required related to the modular buildings to bring the site into conformance with the zoning ordinance. So before a new use could be established, we're going to have to take a look at specific site details, and things that may need to be brought into conformance, including parking and buffering, will need to be addressed at that time. We did receive one letter against the rezoning. This letter author wanted to be put on the record stating that she was opposed to the rezoning, with the main concern being traffic along Canebrake. The author was Teresa Lane, who lives at 174 Shady Grove Lane, which is directly to the south of the site. With that being said, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions, Mr. Lannister?
Yes, I have a question.
Followed by Mr. Coles.
What are the site-specific site conditions you would want to tie to the site plan?
Specifically, we'd be concerned about the actual use of the modular buildings. I can't speak on behalf of the actual building code. I don't know if there's someone from the city that could speak to that matter. Making sure that a certificate of occupancy can actually be issued for those buildings, but also making sure that there's adequate on-site parking given the square footage of the proposed use, as well as making sure that appropriate buffering is provided, especially on the south side of the property line adjacent to the single-family residential.
Mr. Coles.
With regards to the letter from Ms. Lane, as we found out today from the county manager, is she aware that Canebrake is being widened?
I can't speak to that matter. I'm not sure if she's aware of that expansion.
So we didn't make her aware of it.
No, and that was I wasn't aware of the Canebrake expansion. Right. So.
Any additional questions, Mr. Lannister? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Is the petitioner here? Sir, if you would please state your name for the record, and you have 10 minutes.
Keith K. White. How you doing? Like I said, I don't see the young lady. She spoke with me, and she was saying, she told me that it was all right with Teresa Lane, whatever her name was. And when she addressed me probably about a couple of days ago, she realized that probably about 7 years ago, I gave her daughter a job that just to keep one of my employees occupied in the industry, I mean, in the building. So that I would explain to her how our building is designed, our building is designed to give back to the local residents in that area. And she said, oh, I asked her, is your daughter named Samantha? I said, yeah, I remember she was going to college and I gave her a job. And that's what our job do. We give back to the community. We actually give back and allow us to give while we train the young people how to sell security system, design home, and have limited movement with the traffic. And we were planning the zone, we asked for the minimum, so it had the minimum effect on the residential area, even though it's going to be rezoned to commercial in the future. We don't want to affect those in the community right now, so we asked for the basic one that it won't affect the community. The company going to give back to the industry, going to help young people train their jobs, give back to Southwest football school. And I'm not just saying that, our track record says it. Our company contribute to feeding in the park at Foresight Park every Sunday between the hours of 1 and 2. We actually passing out the water. But with that being said, that don't have effect on the land. But we notice that to the left, the right of the land, as you're going out of the parking lot, it has a zone with electrical, so that won't be affected because we got a big buffer area on that side. And right behind the building is actually a big buffer area. When they built that subdivision, it was one of the requirements for a buffer area. And on the left, on the right side, you got it tied up in the family heirs property. No, 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 no. What's to do to get it? So we have a problem with Dave. But during that time, all we did was create and clean up that property from cutting out. It's currently being cut down the trees. So we communicated with the city, and they told us, well, in order for you to do anything with those particular buildings, you have to rezone it so it could be for the business, for the office security alone business, and that's what we're in the process of doing now. And I appreciate you guys' time, ladies' time.
Any questions of Mr. White? Thank you, Mr. White. I do not have any speaker cards, but is there anyone here to speak on this matter? Okay. Does the city have a position on parking or anything with respect to the certificate of occupancy that Mr. Lawrence had mentioned?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Tyrus Petrie, Principal Zone Inspector with the City of Savannah Planning and Urban Design Department. The Development Services Department and the Planning and Urban Design and the MPC will be reviewing the site development permit for the parking to make certain that they have the necessary number of parking spaces along with the buffers, as Mr. Lawson has explained. The certificate of occupancy will be, the use of the building will be handled by the city's building official with the Development Services Department. And my recommendation would be that the petitioner would meet with the building plan review team to determine whether or not it's even worth submitting a building permit for those existing buildings, or if they should just submit a permit for a new type of building. That's something that the building official will need to make a decision on, and probably at the building plan review meeting.
Any questions? Yes, Ms. Milton.
So who owns the property now? You own the property? Oh, okay. So, but now the buildings that are on the property need to be brought up to code.
That is correct. I'm not even certain if they are able to be brought up to code. That's something that the petitioner would need to probably have the building plan review team just look at it. Basically, it would be a pre-application meeting, and the team will say, okay, you need to hire an architect or an engineer to make certain that it could be even brought up to code to meet the state Georgia construction and minimum life safety standards for conversion of the residential structure into a office or commercial structure.
Any other questions?
That's a lot of stuff that you got to do after we zone it.
One second, sir. Any other questions? Ms. Milton?
I was trying to get Ms. Wilson to work. I was just brought on that.
In the past, generally when you have an existing modular units on a property, the building official will ask that those buildings, those modular units, come into compliance. That is a process where there's a company that will go in and make sure that they can be converted and brought into code. If they can't, then the buildings really need to be removed, but the building official should weigh in on this early. In fact, if I were the applicant, I would be talking with the building official now, because it takes time to get those modular units redone. And there is a facility that I know of that's up in Virginia. There's one, I think, up in the northern part of the state, where that's all they do is bring modular units up to building code, but it's got to be brought up to the commercial code. So that is something the applicant we'll have to consider if it's worth the cost of doing that, or if is it more cost effective for him to put his resources into bringing the current house up to code and maybe doing an addition to take care of his needs that are currently being handled with those two modular units.
Is the petitioner occupying the building now?
I believe, and maybe you can help answer, you operate anything out of those current buildings now, or did the city tell you to put a stop to anything?
Well, we just kind of have storage to it now. We're not operating out of it. And the reason why we're not operating out of it was because it's not zoned for residential, it's zoned for commercial building. And it's up to code commercial office building. That's why we weren't able to do anything. They put a stop. They said, well, you have to rezone it for the commercial. So it is an up-to-date building that already meets all the regulations. And I welcome the city, I welcome the metro department, whoever did do the inspection, to come by. But I have no problem. We will stop because we have to get the, once they give us the okay, we got the setbacks and everything for the parking lot and the driveway and everything that meets the standard for the square footage of the building.
Thank you, Mr. White. This was an academic conversation for you, just in case they were not within the specs.
Yes.
Is there a motion?
Move to accept staff's recommendation.
Second.
And properly moved and second discussion. Being there, I'll call a question. Has been approved. Thank you, Mr. White. Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Other business. We affirmed the executive director's contract earlier today, and I am now going to appoint a nominating committee for our new slate of officers. I'm going to appoint Mr. Lacey Manigault, Mr. Ellis Cook, and Ms. Karen Jarrett to that position. Next, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Properly moved. Second. We have some development plans submitted for review. We stand adjourned.